Mr. Speaker.
Order, order.
And that's David Carter, the Speaker now for 3.5 years, taking over from his National colleague, Lockwood Smith, on the last day in January 2013. This is Mr. Carter's 8th Parliament. He began as a National backbencher 22 years ago in 1994, when he won the by-election in the Selwyn seat that was created by the resignation of former Finance Minister Ruth Richardson. Mr. Carter has done virtually every job in the House. He's been an electorate MP and a list MP, a junior party whip, select committee member and chairman, and cabinet minister in charge of several portfolios, most notably as Minister for Primary Industries, a position he'd prized but had to relinquish to become Speaker. As well as presiding in the chamber, Mr. Carter chairs 4 committees involved in the administration of the House. Among them is the Standing Orders Committee, which, at about this midpoint in every parliamentary term, runs a fine-tooth comb through the rules of debate, procedure and general behaviour known as Standing Orders. We thought it would be a good chance during this adjournment to ask Mr. Carter for a preview of this year's review of the Standing Orders, but got sidetracked right at the start with a question about question time, which Mr. Carter chairs every sitting day whenever he's in the House. It's his most visible role and seldom fails to require his decision on whether a question has been answered or just addressed. A not-so-subtle difference noted by former British Prime Minister David Cameron in his last Prime Minister's question time in the House of Commons on Wednesday, July the 13th.
Order. Questions to the Prime Minister.
I've done a bit of research, Mr. Speaker. I have addressed 5,500 questions from this dispatch box. I'll leave it for others to work out how many I've answered.
There, in a witty nutshell, David Cameron opens the barn door in the middle of Standing Order 386, which says that replies to questions must contain an answer that seeks to address the question asked, if, and this is the final escape, it can be given consistently with the public interest. I asked Mr. Carter if there'd been a shift in emphasis from answering to addressing.
I don't think it's changed at all, and if you rely on speakers ruling right back for 20 or 30 years, the speaker has always said the answer must address the question. Otherwise, the speaker effectively becomes a quizmaster, and very often, in fact, more times than not, the person who asked the question would say it hasn't been answered to my satisfaction. So my technique, I don't think it's changed significantly at all. It is that the question must be addressed. If it's a blatant attempt not to even address the question, then my technique regularly has been to allow additional supplementaries. And the fact I do that, I think, shows that I'm suggesting to the House the Minister's response to date has been totally inadequate.
You mentioned Speaker's rulings. What's the difference between Speaker's rulings and Standing Orders?
Standing Orders are the rules, and Speaker's rulings are the interpretation of the rules by various speakers, and if they're helpful to any future speaker in interpreting Standing Orders as they exist at that time, then we publish the Speaker's rulings as a guide to speakers. So as questions come into me at 11:30, I'm using my own political experience to think about where supplementary questions might go, and I'm then referring to speakers' rulings as I get ready. Sometimes they go on a different tact, but surprisingly, many times I can predict where supplementary questions are going to go simply because I've spent 22 years or more in the House at question time.
You seem to have a very good memory for the question, and when it comes to an argument as to whether what was asked, is that a really sort of focus that you've developed, or you have a good memory anyway?
No, what I'm doing is I'm writing down as quickly as I can bits of the question so that when a member often says, that was my question hasn't been answered, I've actually asked this, and I say, no, you didn't ask that. You started with, and I certainly get the first part of the question. The questions in my mind, with many of the current members of Parliament, are simply too long as supplementaries. So I could strictly interpret standing orders and rule them out because they're not concise. It is an opportunity for a bit of political debate. It is the debating chamber after all. So I think I'm, as a speaker, relatively lenient in the way I interpret Standing Order 380, which is that the fact that the question must be concise and without opinion. Many of them actually don't measure that particular rule.
And you would say that your interpretation of that standing order is really no different from Lockwood Smith's?
Oh, it's different. In my opinion, it's not. Lockwood used to also attempt to sometimes suggest how a question should be answered. I don't think that's the role of the Speaker at all. The Speaker should not be a judge. He should only judge whether the question has been addressed. If there's no attempt to address the question, fair enough, let the member ask it again. And that, in effect, I think embarrasses the minister often enough to make him cooperate. Sometimes, to be fair, there's quite a lot of noise in the House, and a minister may not have heard the question correctly when it's first given. By allowing it to be repeated, a minister then has an opportunity to clearly hear the question, and I expect the minister then to answer it.
Acoustics play an important part, because you can hear things that we can't hear on the soundtrack.
And there's quite a lot, I think, that members of the public in the gallery can hear, particularly interjections in the back half of the debating chamber, which actually I don't hear. So it's a place where you quite often get quite a lot of heated debate. You get interjection coming from the back half of the chamber. Very hard to hear those specific interjections of what they are, but you certainly know that it's starting to lead to some disorder.
Going back to the standing orders where we came in, the review of standing orders is about to get underway.
Yep.
And this will be the second time you've chaired the committee.
Correct.
And would you be expecting this to be just a fine-tuning this time, or do you expect any significant changes?
One area that possibly would be worth considering is whether we have the select committee structure appropriate for the way we've formed super ministries. And if you take particularly the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, it now spans effectively a whole number of select committees. Is it time to review the title accorded to the select committee? Is it time to review the number of select committees, perhaps have less of them and more members on the select committees? It is a debate we raised briefly at the last review of standing orders. It was not well received at that occasion, but maybe we've moved now to redesign the way we do the financial review debates, for instance, in Parliament, doing them more by topic or theme. Is it time to adjust the composition of select committees accordingly?
And is this something that you bring to the table?
Well, it would be something that the clerk will also bring. I'll bring it to the table. I know the clerk is thinking along those lines. At the moment, what the clerk is trying to do is get more input from those interested in the standing orders so that we do have a good discussion about how to continue to modernise standing orders so they remain relevant. So he has embarked now on a process of going around all the caucuses, trying to get them more involved in what works within standing orders, what doesn't work, what we could change. He's also then going to the committee will call for public submissions. They'll be the normal ones that come forward that we've heard before that might not get a lot of traction. But listen, as chair of the committee, I'm open to any ideas that have relevance.
Then, having considered the submissions and all the evidence, you write a report that goes to the chamber and is debated in the chamber, has to be debated by the House?
Yes, it's often a relatively short debate. It depends whether anything's come from that select committee that's absolutely controversial. But over the time that I've been a Member of Parliament, if you go back to the standing orders in 1994 to where they are today in 2016, incrementally they've changed, but when you look at the difference between 1994 and 2016, the changes have been quite significant. Well, one that's worked extremely well are these extended hours, where instead of a government going into urgency time and time again, sometimes for legislation which the public of New Zealand would not have considered to be of an urgent nature, we've now got the opportunity for the government, by consensus of a meeting around the business committee, which occurs every Tuesday that Parliament's sitting in this very office, by consensus they bring legislation that's effectively non-controversial, all parties agree, and they then have the extended sittings, which means on a Tuesday morning or a Wednesday morning or a Thursday morning, the House can sit to cover that sort of business. Particularly treaty settlement legislation has been used a lot in extended sittings.
Your daily routine, when you start work, what do you do first?
I come in about between 7 and 7:30 and spend time catching up with emails or correspondence. There's then a number of meetings because I'm effectively the Minister for Parliamentary Service and for the Office of Clerk. So Parliamentary Service is quite a large organisation employing over 400 people. They are the people in this complex that make the complex work, the security of the Parliament, for example, but also all the electorate staff that are employed by MPs throughout New Zealand are effectively employees of Parliamentary Service. So those two portfolios take a lot of my time through the morning. Another thing that regularly occurs in those morning sessions would be meeting with the various ambassadors. The ambassadors who are either resident here in Wellington or perhaps if they're smaller countries and based in Canberra will visit New Zealand a couple of times a year. They always take the opportunity of coming and meeting the Speaker of the New Zealand Parliament as a courtesy. At 11:30 every day, I start then with preparation for question time. The Clerk of the House brings the questions to me, and between 11:30 and 2 o'clock, I spend my time studying those, thinking about where the answers might go, what difficulties may come up through question time, so I'm well prepared for it.
Sometimes the argument spills over into the chamber about that scrutiny process that you go into. Do you always anticipate these arguments that come up, or does something take you by surprise?
Most of them I can anticipate because the argument will have occurred first of all in lodging the question, so there'll have been a discussion between staff within the office of the clerk and various politicians or political parties about the suitability of a question. So more often than not, I'm aware that a member might be grumpy because the question that he or she submitted has been altered or required to be further authenticated.
Right.
So I tend to know what's coming up. So but I can be caught by surprise. The difficulty or the challenge I have is these points of order are raised and they must be ruled on there and then in most instances. It's a bit like refereeing without the ability to go up to a TMO when there's a close call. I've got to make a decision. Sometimes if it's an issue that's raised that I think genuinely needs further consideration, I will tell them I'll come back to the House on the next day. So it doesn't tend to happen very much. I don't look at the video at all. I go back over Hansard in the evening when it comes into my office about 5:30. I go back over the Hansard every day, and I use that as the starting point for my meeting with the clerk when he comes into my office the next day at 11:30. And we quite constructively go back over the Hansard and I ask him, was I right in this instance? Could I have handled this a different way? And we use it as a bit of constructive criticism or constructively.
You've been Speaker now for just over 3 years. Have you settled into the job, do you think?
I think so, yes. I must admit I was very nervous when I started. It's not a job that I ever aspired to. The Prime Minister asked me whether I'd be prepared to do it. I came here with one ambition, and that was to be Minister of Agriculture, Minister of Primary Industries. I achieved that. I was thoroughly enjoying the challenge of that role. But the Prime Minister obviously thought I had the temperament and would gain the respect of the House to do the job. Having taken it on, the initial few months, I think, well, it was a nervous wreck as I took the challenge of chairing Parliament. But I've grown into it, and I'm sure that other people would say I've established a style that's me. It will be different to another speaker. It'll be different to former speakers. But I can honestly say, hand on heart, to the best of my ability, I've operated in an absolutely apolitical way. And that's the essence of being a good speaker.
But you're the best I've seen since I was in 94.
Well, I think you should put that on. Well, it is. You just develop a style. And I don't go to caucus. I have minimal involvement with any National Party conferences or functions. And I consider I'm privileged, I'm honoured to be Parliament's person. I'm not there to help the government. And when I asked the Prime Minister to leave that time, I was right in asking him to leave. He just defied me when I rose to my feet and told him to stop. He deserved it. My job is to give every member of Parliament a fair go, provided that member of Parliament also abides by the rules.
And those rules are in the standing orders about to be reviewed for this Parliament by a committee chaired by the Speaker, David Carter. Hope he didn't catch my cold. I'm Tom Frewen, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.